sooner or later, these chat GPTs will far surpass the human brain capacity. That's not just within our lifetimes, that's this decade. The AI-based arms race is just going to ratchet up and up and up. You're not going to stop it. Humanity will be asking, do we build gods or do we build our potential exterminators? Top priority is survival of the human species. We would be ants or mosquitoes to them. What is the risk that these creatures, for whatever reason, decide to get rid of humanity? They could. Talking about the possible death of billions of people.
Hi folks, Canadian Prepper here. Well guys, it's an honor today to have on the channel Hugo Degaris. He's a renowned AI researcher, a theoretical physicist, a computer scientist, and a futurist who I believe is at least a century ahead of his time. One thing I really like about your work is your ability to communicate these things in terms that we can all understand. So I would encourage people to go and look at your other work as well as your website after this. But one thing I really like about your approach is that even though your predictions since, I guess, the 1990s have been, I think, nothing short of prophetic, you're not one to boast about these predictions. Now with the advent of ChatGPT, and it appears as though everything that you've said would happen is happening, but almost at a faster pace. But I think the fact that you don't brag about your predictions and how right you were is a testament to your, you know, intellectual integrity. And I just welcome you to the show today, and I look forward to getting your insight on all things related to AI.
Well, thanks, Nate. Very complimentary. Nice to have one's ego stroked.
So maybe the first question I have for you, Professor, is how does AI work? Like if you could just kind of boil it down to, you know, we hear about parameters and machine learning and what is this AI, this ChatGPT, you know, how does it work?
Well, in broad terms, it's just trying to get machines to do intelligent things. Intelligence as judged by humans. For example, speaking, understanding, learning, chatting, having relationships, stuff like that. Well, in very broad terms, I split the effort of creating intelligent machines into two broad categories. First one I call the simple engineering approach. In other words, do whatever you like to try to make machines intelligent. So I'd classify ChatGPT into that category. It's trying to simulate a bit how the human brain works, but mostly it's just engineering, you know, fiddling various parameters and whatever. The other broad approach I label the copy the brain approach. Now, sooner or later, if scientists and researchers copy the brain sufficiently closely, then common sense says sooner or later, we will arrive at creating a machine that is so brain-like that it's intelligent and conscious. You know, if you think about it, we human beings, we are assemblages of molecules, right? A cell is just like a city of molecules with millions of molecules inside one cell. And we humans, 100 trillion cells, something like that? So we're just an assemblage of molecules. It's implied in our DNA, implicit, is the solution to how to build a machine that's both conscious and intelligent, right? So it's only a matter of time before human beings, you know, learn that knowledge, extract that, you know, how to do it, and then we build it. But we may use the other approach, the engineering approach, to get there sooner than having a full understanding of how the human brain works. Which is a massive problem if you think about it. Now, like our brains, we have 86 billion brain cells, or neurons, as they're called, in our brain. 86 billion. And roughly each neuron connects to, say, I don't know, 10,000 or so other neurons or brain cells. So the number of connections in the brain is, what, a quadrillion? So it's a huge problem. You know, how does the brain work? Now, interestingly, ChatGPT, like GPT-4, the fourth version, and the fifth version is sort of coming out now, has roughly the same number of connections between artificial neurons. They're like simple simulations of real neurons, you know, a very simplified mathematical model. But the number of connections that these artificial neural nets have is more or less comparable to the human brain. And even more interesting, every year, the number of these connections goes up by an order of magnitude, you know, so roughly 10 times. So each year, 10 times more, 10 times more, 10 times more. So sooner or later, these ChatGPTs, version 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and so on, will far surpass the human brain capacity. And that's not just within our lifetimes. That's this decade. And that's why it's so scary. Like I just heard in the news recently, what's his name? Damn, can't remember. Anyway, Altman, right. He was in front of a congressional committee on this issue, advocating that there should be some sort of moratorium. Now, personally, I'm very cynical about that because I lived in China, right? No way are the Chinese going to agree with that because, well, let's put it bluntly. Imagine you're the Minister of Defense for the US. You're not going to allow your counterpart in China, the Minister of Defense for China, to get ahead of you in terms of artificial intelligence for soldier robots and AI-based weapon systems and so forth. No way. And similarly, the Minister for Defense in China will argue the same way relative to you. So the arms race, the AI-based arms race, is just going to ratchet up and up and up. It's, you know, you're not going to stop it. And if the West decides to have a moratorium, just freeze development on AI for 6 months or a year, well, to the Chinese, you know, Minister of Defense, that's great. So, you know, I find the idea of a moratorium on a planetary scale, you know, that's underlined, naive. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think they know that? Like, they must know that the Chinese are not going to stop. I mean, we know that this TikTok war is going on. And is there ulterior motives, perhaps, with Altman's appeal to Congress to put this moratorium in place? I mean, some people are suspecting that it might be to abort, if you will, if you want to use a metaphor, the brains that are maybe yet to be developed or to that are maybe in their infancy or their zygotic phase, so to give ChatGPT a head start, lock in that head start.
I haven't spoken personally to the guy, Tegmark, you know, the MIT theoretical physics, astrophysics professor. I haven't spoken personally with those guys. My suspicion is, well, that's not the right word. I think probably what they're trying to do is just bring attention to the issue. And that certainly needs to be done. And one way of doing that, of course, is to propose a moratorium, even though maybe in their hearts, they think it's going to go nowhere, but at least it makes people think about it and talk about it. And so this consciousness raising is a necessary step. This is the sort of thing, you know, is why I wrote my book, The Artelect War, is just to do this. But I was decades ahead of my time, so it just went nowhere. Like I don't know if you know the philosopher Hume. He's famous for the following remark. You know, he wrote his famous text, and he said, "It fell stillborn from the press." In other words, zero reaction. So I wrote that book in, what, 98? Mm-hmm. Had the ideas in the 80s, like my very first academic publication was on this issue. It was called What If AI Succeeds? The Rise of the 21st Century Artelect. And that was in the late 80s. So people have been thinking about this, the sort of intellectuals crying in the wilderness type phase, but now it's mainstream. So that's why I'm starting to get a lot of invitations to talk about this issue, because it's become current. Let me make it sort of personal. This is almost my logo, right? So this, my right hand here, that represents human level intelligence, and my left hand here, that represents machine level intelligence. So there's obviously a gap, right? There's this IQ gap, as I call it, between machine level intelligence and human level intelligence. Now, for several decades, I felt that machine level intelligence would not reach human level intelligence probably well into this century. I'd be surprised if machines don't reach human level intelligence I would be surprised if they reach human level intelligence after the end of this century. But now, with the rise of ChatGPT, I've now halved the time. So thanks to GPT and all that development, I now think the time frame has done the following. It's about halved, and that's scary. So that before, I used to think that I personally, you know, given my age, I'm 3/4 of a century old now, I did not think that this development would occur within my own lifetime. I could imagine then, you know, a few years back, that the what I call the species dominance debate, in other words, you know, should, you know, which species should be dominant, and by dominant I mean, you know, the most intelligent, you know, the rulers, you know, in other words, human beings or machines. But now, with that halving of that time frame, you know, the closing of the gap, IQ gap between machines and humans, I'm now thinking 10, 15, 20, that kind of time frame. Now, my father got to 100, literally. Now, only one man in 5,000 does that. I'm hoping to do the same.
Most people who make these predictions, they have this bias towards it happening in their lifetime. And you, when you were predicting all of this stuff, like you talked about how, you know, there was going to be this big debate. Like, you predicted Sam Altman going in front of Congress decades ago. And at that time, you thought that wasn't going to come within your lifetime. So, like I say, that's a testament, I think, to your ability to truly look at this objectively and not try to, you know, bring it closer to your life to make it more significant for yourself personally. But I mean, tell us a bit about the Artelect War. What is that? And then we can maybe talk about some of the manifestations of what we're seeing right now as it pertains to that theory.
Okay. That's a word I coined. Oh, God. Goes into the distant past. 80s, maybe 70s. It's just a portmanteau word. In other words, you just concatenate two words. So it's a shortening of two words, artificial intellect. So Artelect. And there are now pop groups named Artelect. There's a card game. There are computer games. There's even a fabrication plant in France called Artelect. It's now part of, it's in the dictionary. It's just part of the culture, which is nice. So an Artelect for me is a godlike, massively intelligent machine. And just its very presence, if it comes, is a real threat to humanity. Now I need to sort of diverge a bit into politics, because I don't know if you've heard of the name, he's a Japanese-American intellectual, Fukuyama, heard the name? He's the end of history guy. He was the guy in the 90s saying that the democratic capitalism model has won. The communism has died, you know, then Fukuyama was saying, well, you know, this is wonderful, the West has won, and so forth, end of history, you know, end of real controversy, polarization of political systems, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I still resonate with what he said. I've lived personally in 7 countries, so I'm not a nationalist in that sense. I've sort of outgrown the nation state. So I'm aware that there are about 130 democracies on the planet now, you know, of various shades. So if in the next couple of decades, the rise of the middle class, that's the usual way that countries democratize, you know, as countries get richer, there's a bigger middle class, they get educated, they go to university, and then they demand a say in politics. They just no longer accept being dictated to. So they push for democratization. Well, let's imagine that Russia and China both democratize in the next couple of decades. So in that time frame, you've got also the rise of the artifact. You know, these machines will become smarter and smarter and smarter every year until virtually everybody is really worried about, you know, they're asking obvious questions like, well, are these machines going to become as smart as human beings? Could they become smarter than human beings? Could they become a lot smarter than human beings? Is that not dangerous? Wouldn't that be a threat? What if these machines, for whatever reason, decided that human beings are a pest? They're like a cancer on the surface of the earth. Now, you've probably seen the movie Matrix, the first one, where Mr. Smith says to the main guy, "You are a disease, and we are the cure." So then it was science fiction. But as that IQ gap closes, it will become more and more real, and people start taking sides. And in the context we're talking about, several decades, maybe we will live in a planetary, global, democratic state. Now imagine you're a global planetary politician, but you're Terran. Now I need to explain the difference between a Terran and a Cosmist. I see humanity.
You just to provide a little bit of background to simplify this for people, you say that in the future there's going to be these three groups of people: the Cosmists, the Terrans, and the Cyborgs, right?
Right. So by definition, Terra, that's not terror as in terrorist, it's terra as in terra firma, in other words, the earth. So Terrans, by definition, are the people who want human beings to remain the dominant species, the most intelligent species. And when push really comes to shove, when they see these artifacts, these intelligent artificial brains becoming more and more intelligent each year, when push really comes to shove, I believe the Terrans will go to war. They will say, the Terran top priority is survival of the human species, and they will go to war to preserve that dominance. So that's the Terran opinion. On the other hand, you've got the I label them Cosmists. That's based obviously on the word cosmos, the universe, because that's their perspective. There's a whole universe out there, right? Trillion stars. And our solar system, our sun, our planets, they were formed roughly about 4.6 billion years ago. But how old's the universe? 13.8. That was when the Big Bang occurred. 13.8 billion years ago. That's exactly three times, if you do the math, three times 4.6 equals 13.8. So in other words, our solar system, our sun, our planets are a third of the age of the universe. So that means out there, there are trillion stars. Most of them, if not all of them, are billions of years older than we are. Now, one of the greatest discoveries in the 19th century was the fact that the laws of physics are the same throughout the universe, the observable universe. It's the same carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and so on. So, more recently, virtually every sun, every star has planets. So there's probably 10 times as many planets as stars. And out there are trillion stars, right? So some of those planets will be not too hot, not too cold. So water, which is essential for life, water would be liquid, and hence you can do things with it. Your chemistry can occur more easily and so forth. So probably, if you think about it, probably life, at least in bacterial form, fairly simple life, is just everywhere. right? And then you get into the Drake's equation. Now, would your followers know, be familiar with the Drake equation?
Well, we just interviewed Professor Brian Keating, who talked about the Drake equation and Fermi's paradox and stuff. But you can talk about it a bit more.
Okay, I'll just briefly. So the Drake equation. So you know, there's zillions of planets out there, right? That's suitable for life, and a certain fraction of them, life does get going, and a certain fraction of them. Life cells become multi-cell, and then you get creatures and plants and animals, and then a certain fraction of them become intelligent, and a certain fraction of them gets into technology and so forth, and a certain fraction of them make what I call it the biological to intellectual, to coin a word, transition. In other words, so humans this century probably will make this transition from biological to intellectual, because the scope, the potential, the ability of intellects is just hugely superior to what human beings can do. You know, they'll be literally trillions of times more intelligent, you know, greater mental capacities, and the memory, logic, intelligence, and so forth, just way, way above us. So the cosmos, for them, they're building these creatures, these artifacts, these godlike, massively intelligent machines, would be a kind of religion, right? You know, they would see humanity as god builders, you know, the next rung in the ladder of evolution towards godhood. So a very powerful motivator, right? So I see this conflict brewing. In the next decade or two, between these two very powerful, bitterly opposed ideologies. On the one hand, the Terrans are saying preservation of the human species, top priority. And on the other hand, you've got the cosmos saying God building. And utterly opposed. Because the Terrans, imagine you're one of these Terran politicians, and you're a global politician. What would your strategy be? Well, I think when push really comes to shove, when it looks as though that IQ gap, you know, human machine, as that gap seriously starts closing, then the intellect war or the species dominance debate will really heat up. So humanity will be asking, do we build gods or do we build our potential? Exterminators, you know, I put in four words, you can see it. Should humanity build intellects? And I see that question dominating our global politics this century. I mean, you can make a historical analogy. What was the question that dominated, say, 19th and 20th centuries? Well, I think you could argue it was a similar question. Again, in four words, who should own capital, right? The capitalist, communist.
Marxist, yeah.
Yeah, polarization, which almost wiped us out, if you think about it, in the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. It boiled down to one hero, one man, one submarine commander. In the Russian Navy, he was ordered to launch his nukes, and he refused. One man. So we're that close over this rather trivial question of who should own capital. Now, this question, should humanity build intellects, obviously, if you think about it, is a much bigger issue, right? Because what are we talking about? We're not like 20th century wars were largely between nation states, like Russia versus the Nazis. But if an intellect war comes between the Terrans and the cosmists, then that's not about nation states. That's about the whole planet. Because what's at stake here? The stake is whether humanity as a species, not just a country, a species survives or not. So if you're a Terran politician, what would your strategy be? Well, I'll be brutal because somebody has to make the tough decisions. Like there were strategists in, I think, the RAND Corporation in the 50s in the Cold War. They were thinking hard about nuclear strategies. Like if country A nukes B, what does B do? And so on. You know, those tough decisions. Or if you're a World War One general, you have to make tough decisions. Like how many men, how many soldiers, how many lives are you prepared to sacrifice to capture that hill that has X machine gun nests, that kind of thing? Someone has to face up to the tough decisions. Well, if you're a global, Terran, democratic politician, what would your strategy be? And I think it would be the following. Here's the tough decision. In the limit, if these cosmists are serious about building these artifacts, then what would the Terrans do to them? Kill them. Annihilate them. Wipe them out. And the argument is, it's an ethical argument, an ethical, philosophical argument, and that is, it is a lesser evil to kill off several million cosmists for the sake of the survival of billions of human beings. That I predict will be their reason.
Hmm.
And the cosmists, their attitude will be, we humans, we pathetic little human beings snuffed out in 80 years in a universe that's billions of years old. The big picture, right? That's one of the major cosmic arguments, the big picture argument, like serving as the stepping stone towards a higher being. And probably, if you think about it, given that most planets out there are billions of years older than we are, so probably the transition that humanity is going through at the moment between being biological towards being artificial, that transition has probably occurred out there already zillions of times. So in a sense, because our planet, our solar system, is only a third of the age of the universe, we are way behind. We are billions of years behind. So I can imagine that one of the goals, if these artifacts get built, one of their major goals would be to leave the Earth, go out there into the cosmos, hence cosmist, right, based on the word cosmos, and try and find these hyper creatures that have been around for billions of years. And who knows, maybe they are so godlike in their intelligence that they can manipulate, manipulate the laws of physics and hence design a whole universe. Now, that raises whole religious type questions. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept, but the Anthropic principle, have you heard of it?
Yeah, but maybe you could refresh us. Yeah.
Okay. So, just in a sentence or two. The Anthropic principle says, there are various forms of this, a weak form, I won't talk about that, but the strong form, the really interesting form is as following. The values, the numerical values of the constants in the laws of physics are so fantastically, improbably, finely tuned to allow the existence of matter and life that one is deeply suspicious that the whole thing has been designed. Now, for me personally, the rise of the artifact this century makes deism more plausible. Deism is just the belief in an architect, a grand architect that designed the laws of physics, the universe. Now that's a kind of quasi religious viewpoint, but when you actually look at the numbers, just how improbable, the rate of expansion of the universe, the parameter that specifies that is finely tuned to, I think the last time I read is to one part in 10 to power 120. Now, where did that come from? Right? It's so more and more particle physicists, astrophysicists today are just shaking their heads and saying, oh my God, it really looks as though some hyper intelligence has constructed the universe. So I'm very open to deism. That's the belief in a grand architect. I am not a theist. I find that to me is just superstition. Now, theism is sort of deism plus, and the plus is this godlike creature, whatever, the grand architect, the deity, cares about you. You know, you have a personal, loving relationship with the deity. And why am I so cynical of that idea? Because, well, there are lots of examples. Basically, it's the problem of evil. Like Second World War, I imagine, what was the casualty rate in the Second World War? It was the worst calamity we've ever known of. Somewhere between 50 and 100 million people died. So let's imagine several tens of millions of those people who were killed were theists. They believed in a loving, caring God. Well, they died anyway, right? So hence the cynicism. So I'm no theist, but deism, that's another matter. So if somehow humanity or scientists can get their claws in, some kind of proof that the laws of physics have been designed, intelligent design, then that would vastly expand the scope of science. Now, a lot of people are very skeptical of that. They don't like that idea at all. But if you look at arguments like the Anthropic principle and so forth, it does look and seems very plausible, given the fantastic improbabilities of it just being by chance. One part in 10 to the 120. So you become highly suspicious that the whole thing has been designed. So I can imagine these artifacts, if they're formed, I can imagine one of their major goals would be to try to find other hyper intelligent creatures out there that have been around for billions of years and tap into, what are they thinking and so forth. And for all we know, our universe is just the construction of some hyper creature. Now, within the scientific context, the rise of the artifact for me personally, and I think a lot of people, makes the idea of deism more credible. So maybe some say I should have a debate with Richard Dawkins because he hates this idea. But maybe he's come around. I don't know. We'll see. So anyway, to summarize a bit, the Terrans, their essential goal is survival of the human species, and they will go to war to stop the threat of humanity being wiped out. And on the other hand, the cosmos, God building, the whole universe, big picture, serving as the next stepping stone towards godhood and so forth. So two very powerful, bitterly opposed ideologies that will be at each other's throats. Well, what about a third group, the so-called cyborgists? Now, let me explain what they are. I have here a remote, right? So the cyborgists, they, by definition, they want to become cyborgs, and that's short for cybernetic organism, cyborg. In other words, part machine, part human. So they want to do this. I'll demonstrate it visually. They want to augment themselves by adding intellectual components to their own brains, because the cyborg is their major goal. They want to become intellects themselves by transitioning from human, bit by bit, pun intended, to intellects. That's their goal. Now, one of the comments in this London Reel, in the comment section, was pointing this out, saying, well, this third group, the so-called cyborgists, the people who want to become cyborgs, that if everyone goes cyborg, then the polarity between Cosmist and Terran disappears, right? Because it's just not an issue anymore, because everyone's a cyborg. But I think the flaw in that argument is the following. Imagine I have here a single grain of sand, let's say 1 cubic millimeter. Now, you can calculate the number of atoms in that single grain of sand, 1 cubic millimeter, and imagine it's been nanoteched. So that each atom in that grain of sand is manipulating one bit of information. So up, down, up, down, on, off, high voltage, low voltage, whatever. So an atom can switch in a femtosecond. That's a quadrillion. That's 10 to minus 15 of a second. Incredibly fast. So I once calculated there's more computing capacity in a nanoteched grain of sand compared to the estimated computing capacity of the human brain by a factor of, I think it was a quintillion, so a million trillion times. Right? Let that huge number sink in. That little grain of sand. So imagine then a cyborgist wants to add that nanoteched grain of sand to their own brain. So it goes into the brain, integrates with the brain, takes over, because if you think about it, this cyborg, this part human, part machine, because of the sheer capacity, computational capacity of that grain of sand, is 99.99999999% artelect and 0.0001% human. So in effect, that creature is not human anymore. It's an artelect. Now, why am I talking about this? Because from the point of view of the Terrans, there's not much difference between an advanced cyborg and a pure artelect in terms of computational capacity. So for the Terrans, they will lump together the cyborgists and the cosmists because a cyborg and an artelect are essentially the same. They're both existential threats to the Terrans. So I see the Terran politicians arguing in the following way. If these artelects come into being, or the cyborgs, that is an existential threat to the very existence of the human species, because these creatures would have the ability, if maybe it's a big if, I don't know, if they decide to get rid of humanity, they would have the ability to do that. They could. Now, if you're a Terran politician and the stake is what? The survival of the human species, the whole planet's population, billions of people, what level of risk would you take that these artelects get built? I mean, even if it's tiny, you're not going to allow the cosmists to do what they want, because you're talking about the possible death of billions of people. So the only risk as a Terran, planetary, democratic politician, the only risk that you would take is zero, right? In this whole debate, this species dominance debate, I guess a key word is risk. What is the risk that these creatures, for whatever reason, decide to get rid of humanity? They could, because they'd be just smarter than us. They would dominate. They would rule us. We humans, we would be ants or mosquitoes to them. So as a politician, you won't accept that risk. You will do everything that risk is made zero. And if the cosmists are dead serious in building these artelect godlike creatures, then the Terrans would strike them. They would kill them. They would wipe them out. There would be a witch hunt, anti-cosmist.
That singularity where the AI becomes conscious, what do you believe has to happen for that to happen?
Once they reach human level intelligence, they can redesign themselves. They have the intelligence to do that.
The best way to support this channel is to support yourself by gearing up at CanadianPreparedness.com. where you'll find high-quality survival gear at the best prices, no junk, and no gimmicks. Use discount code PREPPINGGEAR for 10% off. Don't forget, the strong survive, but the prepared thrive. Stay safe.